This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. Judge Neil Gorsuch is Donald Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court to replace the seat vacated by Justice Antonin Scalia last year. Vacated meaning, of course, Scalia passed away. Gorsuch's ultra-conservative credentials make him an ideal pick for Trump's right-wing base and for his fellow Republican lawmakers who blocked President Obama's right to appoint a replacement justice. Gorsuch certainly has the professional credentials to be a Supreme Court justice, but his seat on the nation's highest court will maintain a long-standing right-wing stranglehold on the court. Trump has urged Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to change the rules, if need be, in order to confirm Gorsuch to the court and rely on what Trump called the, quote, nuclear option. The Republican Party arrived at this point through unprecedented political obstructionism. Now the party is feigning anger at any Democratic attempt to do the same. My guest is David Dayan. He is a contributor to The Intercept and The Nation and a weekly columnist for the Fiscal Times. His new book is called Chain of Title: How Three Ordinary Americans Uncovered Wall Street's Great Foreclosure Fraud. Welcome to the program, David.
Thanks for having me on again.
So first, I think it's really important for us to examine how the Republican Party got here, even if it's not that long ago that Scalia died and Obama nominated Merrick Garland to replace him. How did we arrive at this point? How was it that the Republicans managed to take away from a president a right that presidents have had right from the beginning to be able to name a justice to the Supreme Court when there's a vacating of a seat?
Well, the simple answer is Republicans controlled the Senate. And under their control, they made a decision that they were going to extend that process out as long as they needed to. And since the right, as you call it, for a president to name a Supreme Court justice and get them confirmed is really not a right established in the Constitution so much as it is a norm. That phrase advising consent is malleable enough that consent can be withheld. Republicans got away with it. And actually, this represents a real successful strategy by Donald Trump to sort of hold the Republican Party hostage by saying, if you get me elected, if you line up behind me, if you don't abandon me, I will do your bidding with regards to the Supreme Court. Trump put out a list that he vetted with the Federalist Society and the Heritage Foundation, these right-wing groups, of 21 names of justices who he would approve of nominating to the court. And so it was very transparent. Everyone knew that if, at least on the right, if Trump was elected, this is the caliber of person who would get on the court. And it allowed Trump to sort of line up those forces behind him. He didn't get abandoned by the Christian right or other group parts of the coalition of conservatives who might have otherwise abandoned him. And so now they're getting their just desserts with Neil Gorsuch.
And Trump has made no secret about this, as you said. Even during his announcement of Gorsuch, you know, he emphasized that he was keeping this very important, perhaps the most important promise during his campaign. At one point, he said, even if you can't stand Donald Trump, you think Donald Trump is the worst, you're going to vote for me. You know why? Justices of the Supreme Court. He used this as a leverage to get elected.
Absolutely. And by contrast, Democrats really didn't. You know, Merrick Garland was this sort of moderate figure who was sort of an attempt by President Obama to bait Republicans into confirming him because he was the best that they could hope for from a Democratic president. In turn, it inspired no real passion on the part of Democrats to get Garland nominated. Merrick Garland's name was not mentioned at the Democratic National Convention at any point. because you know, Hillary Clinton was kind of wishy-washy on whether she would continue to promote Garland for that seat. There just wasn't the passion inspired by Garland on the left, the way that that list of names inspired passion for Trump, really, on the right. And it shows the two different ways that the parties went about this. And clearly, Democrats, if they would have nominated a figure that the rank and file could rally behind, like they did Sonia Sotomayor, for example, it might have been a different scenario.
Right. I mean, time and again, the Democrats and even President Obama misjudged the Republicans, refused to believe that the Republicans can go lower than low, can keep playing dirty and aggressively. And time and again, they paid the price. So here we are at this moment where Neil Gorsuch is the nominee now, and the Republicans control both houses of Congress. And of course, one more point, by the way, on what happened last year. You brought up Hillary Clinton. John McCain, who's considered a moderate Republican, made it really clear. He said, "I promise you that we will be united against any Supreme Court nominee that Hillary Clinton, if she were president, would put up." David, do you think that had Hillary Clinton won the Electoral College, the Republicans, having control of both houses, would have stalled her nominee for four long years?
It's possible. I mean, McCain kind of said it, that he would. Remember that that would have changed the balance of power on the Supreme Court. It would have changed from, you know, five Republicans or Republican-leaning votes to five Democratic or Democratic-leaning votes. So that would have stirred up a lot of emotion. And it just goes to show that when you break a norm and when you decide that maybe you don't have to fill a vacancy on the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court can go with eight members for a while, then there's nothing stopping you from having the Supreme Court go with seven members or six members or five members. You know, once you break that norm, it's broken, and really anything can ensue.
I mean, don't the Republicans worry that they are setting a precedent? I mean, even the New York Times, in criticizing Neil Gorsuch's nomination and criticizing what the Republicans did, said, well, don't the Democrats should not actually you know, fall to the same depths or use the same tactics that the Republicans did. But really, once you set a precedent, the Republicans, what right do they have to complain about it? If they promised obstructionism at every step, what standing do they have to criticize the same from the Democrats?
They don't have any standing, but of course they do have the power to change those rules if they need to. So right now, Supreme Court justices need to clear a filibuster, which has a 60-vote threshold. And already, some Democrats have said they're going to hold Republicans to that. They're going to need to cross a 60-vote threshold. And that means that a number of Democrats would be needed to vote for, you know, to end that filibuster in order for Gorsuch to be elected, but or confirmed. But what Trump was saying today is that if Democrats try that, well, then Mitch McConnell can take what is called the nuclear option and reduce that threshold from 60 votes to 50 votes.
And McConnell can just do that?
Yes. In fact, the precedent was set actually by Harry Reid to change the rules of the Senate by lowering the threshold for the filibuster under certain circumstances. So the filibuster was changed for executive appointments to the cabinet. That's why all of these cabinet officials only need 50 votes. And that was changed during the Obama administration by the Senate Majority Leader at the time, Harry Reid. And so there's
no
reason.
And they did that because the Republicans kept filibustering, right?
Right. It was because of Republican obstruction. So Democrats said, OK, well, we're going to go around your obstruction. And Republicans, frankly, can do the same thing and turn the Senate, at least for Supreme Court and executive nominations, into a majoritarian institution.
Wow. So at this point, Democrats have very little left to lose, it feels. I mean, they're the minority party. It's not clear that they realize that the minority party can and should, you know, be in opposition, particularly given how much public backing they have. I mean, we're not at a place where a minority party has a minority support in the country. There's been various reports that have contradicted one another about whether the Democrats are going to stand firm, filibuster, or not. What do you think is going to happen? What can the Democrats do? And what will they do, you think?
Right. I mean, I think Democrats have been sort of behind the curve of their constituents who really want them to fight and resist virtually everything that a Democratic Senate and Donald Trump has thrown at them. And they can do that to a certain extent, and they can certainly slow down the business in the Senate. They can do the best they can. However, as I just mentioned, you know, Republicans have this whole card to play, and that's to change the rules of the Senate. And so I don't want to get anyone's hopes up too much that Democrats can just hold out with a blockade, because Republicans have clearly said that they're perfectly willing to change those rules if they have to. That doesn't mean that Gorsuch won't be filibustered. He probably will be, at least to start. But it's unclear whether the entire Democratic caucus will allow that. You have 10 senators who are seeking re-election in 2018 in states that Donald Trump won, including 5 of them in states that Donald Trump won by wide margins. So there might want to be a little more deferential to Trump's nominations and things like that. So it's unclear where Democrats are going to go right now in the Senate. However, I definitely will agree that the constituents, the rank and file, want Democrats to resist and resist with every fiber of their being and take every step they possibly can. That doesn't mean that they're going to be successful at that simply by virtue of the fact that they don't have the votes. But they want them to get caught trying, at least.
Now, there have been some media reports and even, you know, some liberal commentators that have said that Neil Gorsuch is actually an appropriate appointee to the court. The New York Times had a piece this morning entitled "Why Liberals Should Back Neil Gorsuch," written by an Obama-era member of the administration. However, the New York Times op-ed page actually encouraged Democrats to block Gorsuch's nomination. So let's talk about Gorsuch himself. Were he to be confirmed, which he probably will be given the Republican stranglehold on the both houses of Congress, what sort of justice would he be? Would he be a Scalia-like justice?
I think so. Just briefly on that piece in the New York Times by Neil Katyal, who was a former Obama administration official. He works for corporate interests that have business before the court. I don't think we should take what he says with any kind of objectivity whatsoever.
So he's one of those pro-corporate liberals, the fiscal conservatives, social liberals?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. And in particularly, he's conflicted right now because literally he's working for people with business before the court. But as far as Gorsuch, he does look like a Scalia clone, a textualist, someone who uses the words of the Constitution to, you know, when he wants to get his way ideologically. He was the vote in the Hobby Lobby case that said that Catholic groups or Christian groups could deny birth control to women. He has in other cases shown a very pro-corporate bent. I think that he would be a reliable conservative. That's why all these judges on this list that Donald Trump had were very carefully vetted by right-wing groups that specialize in the Supreme Court. I mean, I don't think there are going to be any major surprises here. This is a guy who's 49 years old, So could be on the court for 30 years, 40 years. And he appears to have a record that puts him either at or even to the right of Antonin Scalia.
Wow, and just imagine if Obama had huddled with a bunch of lefty organizations to have them vet his list of justices, the hue and cry we would have been hearing from Republicans. What about the issue of abortion, David? A lot of voters were able to overlook Trump's one-time support of abortion rights because they knew he would come to them with somebody who stood against women's reproductive rights. And of course, they've long held Roe v. Wade in their sights. Where does Gorsuch stand on abortion?
Well, his record's kind of thin on reproductive rights. He hasn't decided very many cases along those lines. However, the Hobby Lobby case certainly had some language in it where he referred to birth control as essentially a device that aborts a human life, which is not really that true factually, and also is similar to the rhetoric that we see on the pro-life crowd. Also, he wrote a book about euthanasia, which condemned the practice of right to die or euthanasia. And in so doing, said that every human life is precious. So there's some rhetorical tendencies here that would seemingly have him be put on the side of being an anti-abortion judge. Now, we don't know how he will respect precedent. Roe v. Wade has been around for 44 years now. We just don't have a sense of where he would actually line up if he had to make the call. But there's certainly some serious hints here.
Well, David, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We live in bizarre times indeed. Let's see how this confirmation process plays out. Thank you, as always, for your contributions to the work and to politics.
Okay, thank you.
My guest is David Day, and he's a contributing writer to The Intercept and The Nation and a weekly columnist for The Fiscal Times. And you can actually watch the interview we did with him last year about his new book, Chain of Title, on our website. That website is risingupwithsonali.com. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/ruwithsonali.